Good morning, church family. Brad, that was decent. Thank you. You know a worship minister is doing his job when you can hear voices behind you singing. I didn't sing much today. I wanted to hear you. And you were singing praises to the Lord, and that was a beautiful, beautiful song. Sound to my ears to hear you singing. If you have your copy of the scriptures, please take your copy and turn with me to the book of Psalms. And we're going to look at, perhaps you've heard of it, Psalm 23. Psalm 23. Brad mentioned a moment ago about the spring sling tonight, and he said it was a cornhole tournament, and it is, but it's much more than that. I've had several of you ask me, if I'm not playing in the cornhole tournament, shall I come? Please do. You can laugh at us who are in the tournament, and it is for everyone. There is a cornhole tournament, yes, of course, but there's also stuff for everyone, so would love to see you here tonight. We are reading the Bible through as a church this year, and we are in the story, and smack dab in the story of King David, and 2 Samuel right now, and then 1 and 2 Chronicles, and you probably know this, but David wrote a majority, or a good portion of the Psalms. And so we're going to take a look at a psalm this week, Psalm 23, and God willing, next week, look at Psalm 51 together as we journey through this Bible reading plan. So hopefully you have found Psalm 23. I'm going to read two different translations. I'm going to read the CSB first, and then I'm going to read probably the one you hear most often and or memorized, and that is the King James Version of Psalm 23. So stand with me in honor of God's Word, and let's read these verses together. First, the Christian Standard Bible Version, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I have what I need. He lets me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He renews my life. He leads me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even when I go through the darkest valley, I fear no danger, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Only goodness and faithful love will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord as long as I live. King James Version reads this way. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Father, would you cause the reality of this psalm to be the reality that we experience in our daily life? Amen. Thank you. You can be seated. 1947, General Mills decided to introduce the public to instant cake mix. Betty Crocker. Instant cake mix. Up until that point, it was all from scratch. Nobody thought that you could dare make a cake instant that would taste anywhere near a scratch-made cake. Sure enough, people were pleasantly surprised at how good these a little spongy But how good these cakes from Betty Crocker tasted. All you had to do was add water. And people were blown away for a short time. I'm told that sales soared right out of the gate and then came to a screeching halt not too terribly long after that. General Mills hired a psychologist to figure out what in the world had gone wrong. You know what the psychologist discovered? They asked a lot of these ladies, primarily ladies, who were baking these cakes, why did you stop buying it? And they said, guilt. They felt guilty for walking to the kitchen table with a cake when all they did was add water. They needed to work more to earn it. They just felt like they were getting too much credit for doing absolutely nothing. Well, General Mills came up with a brilliant strategy that helped them become a cash cow, thanks to Betty Crocker. They had an ad run, and the ad simply read, "Add an egg." Here's one of the pictures in a magazine from those days. Because you add the eggs yourself. True story. And sales went through the roof. And to this day, as far as I know, they're doing pretty well today. Add an egg. The psychologist, General Mills, knew something about us humans that is so true. We want to bring something to the table. We want to add something to the equation. We want to prove our worth. We want to prove our value. We want to demonstrate that we did something. And they know us. And it's true. Even if it's just cracking an egg, we want to be able to say, look at what I did. And to be sure, there are times in our life we need to work, show effort, add an egg. It brings purpose and value to our lives when we do something. We want people to be proud of us. But what about our life with God? What about our relationship with God? Yes, we want to add an egg to a Betty Crocker cake. But what about the proverbial egg we want to add to our relationship with God to show what we've done for it? The first line of this psalm is known by millions, if not billions. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Bob, I'll ask you again. The Lord is my shepherd. There we go. Takes us back to Exodus 3 when Moses was shepherding. And he appeared, and there is a burning bush. And that's where God reveals himself and his name, Yahweh. I am who I am. This is the name used in Psalm 23, verse 1. Yahweh is my shepherd. It moves us forward to Jesus in John chapter 10, where he himself declared, I am the good shepherd. We all know Psalm 23, 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But if you think about it, there's an implication to calling Yahweh your shepherd. And it's insulting, a little rude. If you call someone your shepherd, what does that mean you are? David calling Yahweh his shepherd means he is calling himself a sheep. I didn't mean to sound like one when I, a sheep. And if you've ever read Psalm 23 and applied it to your own soul, you were by implication calling yourself a sheep. And that is not a compliment. Do yourself a favor. If you think I'm over exaggerating a little bit, I mean, just tell you, sheep are dumb. Pardon my language, they're idiots, morons. Not smart at all. Do yourself a favor. Tonight when you get home from the Great Spring Sling, go to the YouTube and type in sheep fail. You can thank me later. They are idiots. You will see a shepherd pull a sheep out of a hole, and seconds later that sheep will fall right back into the same hole. You will see a sheep caught in a fence, and the shepherd is doing all he can to get that sweet sheep out of the fence, and the sheep is doing the exact opposite because he thinks he knows better. You will see sheep that have wandered off, and they haven't been sheared in so long that their wool is so heavy that they eventually fall over by their own burden and can't get up, because they can't get up themselves, and they die. You will see sheep following other sheep off a cliff to their death. And they just go. You will see sheep wander off thinking they can do things on their own and be destroyed and eaten by predators. I don't necessarily recommend showing those to the children. What does it say over and over and over again? Sheep are simple-minded, they're stubborn, and they need 24/7 care. They can do absolutely nothing on their own. Nothing. When David says, Yahweh is my shepherd, he is communicating something that's not very flattering about himself. He's a sheep. Left to himself, he will die. Left to himself, he'll follow the next guy over a cliff. Left to himself, he'll wander off, and by his own burden, he'll die. Left to himself, he'll think this tastes good or this looks good, and a predator that he thinks is nice is going to devour him. Left to himself, he's going to be stuck in a fence and not be able to get out. Left to ourselves, left to sheep self, they can do nothing. The Lord is my shepherd. Yes, but that means you and I are sheep. It's true. We want to add an egg to the cake. When you and I try to add an egg to the cake, we drop it before it gets to the bowl. I'm going to read Psalm 23 again in the King James Version. I want you to notice who does everything. And I want you to notice what the sheep do. It's fascinating if you read it with the lens of who's the one doing any work. Psalm 23 again, according to the King James Version. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Who's doing the work? The shepherd, Yahweh. What do? The only thing we do is receive. I shall not want. Lie down. Soul restored, no fear, table prepared, head anointed with oil, cup running over, chased by goodness and mercy, dwell in God's house. When it comes to life with God, be careful as to whether or not you want to bring an egg to the equation. General Mills was brilliant because they know how we sheep are. We like to get a little credit. We like to bring something to the table. And you know what? The enemy knows that's how you are. And he loves either making you prideful by thinking you brought something to this relationship with God, or keeping you from God by thinking that what you've done keeps him from you. The enemy knows. the way we are. Something interesting at the end of verse 3. David says, for his name's sake. In other words, for God's glory. God does all of this so he gets the glory. He doesn't share it. All the pressure's on him. When we try to bring something to the table, we walk away with saying, well, I did this. I mean, yes, sure, God, you did this, but I did this. But no. David says it's all for his name's sake. It's all for his glory. So this begs a question in my mind, Wes Franklin. Why is it that this is one of our favorite psalms, yet you and I tend to be so far from what's communicated in it? Why is it that this is one of our favorite psalms, but we worry ourselves to death? We love this psalm. But let's be honest, it seems way too aspirational, doesn't it? That's sweet. That's nice. Let's put it on a pillow. But can it be real? You know, when David wrote this psalm, most people think when his son Absalom was chasing him to kill him. Anybody got any family issues up in here? You know what prayer request I get most from you all and from my own self? Family stuff. That's why I love the Bible. I think my stuff's bad. David's son was trying to kill him. And he writes this psalm in the middle of it. Why don't we feel this way? Why is it just a nice psalm? And how can it be reality, or can it? You know what I think it is? I think we assume we need to go to the store, buy an egg, and come back and show God what we've done. Or it's check-ins with God. You know check-ins? Once a week check-in maybe. Some of us are really good and we do it maybe 10 minutes in the morning, a little check-in. Or once a month, I mean, sometimes maybe twice a month, we'll check in and we'll say, look at what we've done. And we hope he doesn't bring up the stuff that we haven't done or the stuff that we've done that we shouldn't have done. And we say to God, hey, look, let's I need some help in these areas. Look at these things I've done. Can you just kind of, let's just not talk about these other, and we do the check-ins. David had a different perspective. He had one job. Be near the shepherd. When a sheep realizes he or she can't do anything, you know what he or she does? Sticks close to the shepherd. One job. Look at verse 2 with me again. Verse 2. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Isn't that interesting? What kind of idiot has to be made to lie down? I'm looking at him. And you're looking at one too. You ever found yourself in the hospital? I didn't plan for this. He's making you lie down. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. David had one job, and that was to be near the shepherd, a constant companion of the shepherd. Not morning check-ins for 10 minutes, not a couple of weeks times a month check-ins. He knew he couldn't wander off far from the shepherd. There's something interesting about the point of this psalm. Poetry, this was a poem, as you know, and most Hebrew poetry, they didn't save the point of the psalm to the end. They put it mostly in the middle of the psalm. Most good poetry in Hebrew, the point of the psalm is right in the middle. Well, I did us all a favor, and I've learned that there are 55 words in the Hebrew in Psalm 23. 55. First 3.5 verses. 1 through the first part of verse 4, 26 words. into verse 4, verses 5 and 6, 26 words. What's 26 plus 26? Oh my gosh. 52. That means there's three words left. You know which three words in the Hebrew are in the smack dab middle of this psalm? For thou art with me. David is communicating something. Here's how I can say this when my son wants to kill me. I've got Yahweh with me. I'm with him, him with me. Constant companion. Where would I want to go? He is with me. Isn't it interesting that he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I don't know about you, but when I'm in danger, I don't walk. When I'm in danger, I want to get out of there as fast as I possibly can. Yet David says, yea, though I walk. Why? He can stroll because God is with him. He knows Yahweh, God is with him. And I wonder if we find ourselves in the valley of the shadow of death because we're on our way to the store to get an egg when the shepherd is there, been there the whole time. I don't know, maybe it's just me. So, West Franklin, where are you trying to add an egg into your relationship with God? Pull a Betty Crocker. Because you can add the eggs yourself. Where are you trying to add an egg? I gave my heart to the Lord when I was 8. Is that your language? I gave my life to Jesus when I was 12. Is that how it works? This is my 5th time to read the Bible through. I quit drinking 6 years ago. I started going to church after we had our first child. I turned my life around when I was 21. Is that your language? Or maybe it's the opposite. I was baptized at age 8, but I have wandered away from the Lord. Honestly, Pastor Matt, I got bored with the Bible reading plan. I hadn't read it in weeks. I thought I was over my addiction, but now it's worse than it's ever been. I'm so tired of committing the same sin over and over and over. I'm so exhausted with church and religion. I'm going through a dark valley. I don't know if I can make it through. Is that your language? How many times do you use the word I when you're talking about your relationship with God? It's not about what you do. It's about what he does. The pressure's not on you. Don't say, I gave my heart to Jesus. He comes and finds your messy heart. And he takes it and says, I will do it. I will do it. I will chase you with goodness and love the rest of your life. Be careful how you talk. I'm told that there was a certain sort of culture norm that happened in this day. And I'm landing the plane. Brad, if you want to start getting your folks up one more. But be quiet, okay? I got something I need to say. I'm told that there was this uninhabited desert culture. And if someone committed a heinous crime, like murder, they would exile themselves to this uninhabitable desert. And it wasn't safe. They just tried to run like a fugitive away from danger. They knew they were going to be hunted for the rest of their days. Always looking over their shoulder, seeing who's going to come, especially the people that they impacted for murder. I'm told that if they never found them, then it went on to their family as well, and their son or daughter would be punished. Except there was one exception. If the fugitive found himself in a shepherd's tent, the shepherd wouldn't ask any questions. The shepherd would merely say, "Let me prepare a table for you. Let me anoint you with oil. And let me refresh you by overflowing your cup." The shepherd, it was a rule. He would be seen as a guest of God, running from all his enemies. And he would come into this tent, and the shepherd wouldn't ask, "What have you been doing? What have you done?" And the shepherd wouldn't say, "What good things have you done?" The shepherd wouldn't ask any questions. The shepherd would simply say, "You're safe here. Let me feed you." Of this, Eugene Peterson wrote, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows." This is the fugitive speaking. A man threatened by his past, a man menaced by the curse of blood revenge, is welcomed into the shepherd's tent. And there, in the presence of my enemies, he is served a meal. In the shepherd's tent, he is safe. I love that. When you come to the shepherd, he doesn't say, "What have you done?" He says, "Welcome. Let me feed you." He doesn't ask questions. He simply takes care of you. You know why? Because the good shepherd, he said he'd lay his life down for his sheep. Your sin problem is taken care of, folks. He's not going to ask you questions. That's done. You go to the shepherd, he'll feed you. If you want to bake a Betty Crocker cake, crack an egg. If you want life with God, be near the shepherd.